something. A new way, a new understanding, a connection, some comfort. You've got questions, and Light on Living puts the spotlight on all the answers so you can shine. Lift and lighten the load of life's challenges and learn simple and easy ways to live a healthy, happy life. You'll gain insight and start to see things in a new way that motivates you. You're invited to hear new, see different, and feel more as Lisa shines the light on living.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to Light on Living. I am your host, Lisa Berry, holistic nutritionist and life coach, helping to lighten the load of life's challenges. And we are here for our second episode of Story Time for the Self-Lover. And I really enjoy being able to share these chapters. Well, we have a surprise, actually. So I'm sharing the chapters from What Self-Love Got to Do with It. However, today, just as we did in back in our month of self-love, we have a special chapter, and that is from Jenna Carelli. And now she wrote her chapter in the book Empowered Mom Boss. And the reason why we have her is that she is just such a part, you know, just a fantastic, oh my goodness, person and business coach and everything. But she actually was in that anthology, and Heather Andrews is part of both of them. So she's just definitely a big part of the team. So she's we're going to be reading her chapter, her story, which I think is just phenomenal. I mean, every single chapter is inspiring. And that's why I'm really excited to be sharing this with you guys and being able to read their chapters. The audiobook will soon be out for What Self-Love Got to Do with It, and that's why I wanted to share these chapters so that you can hear them by me right now a little faster than on the audiobook. The audiobook, it's a lot much more slower paced, so you can really dive into the emotions. But just being able to hear the stories and maybe something you're going to really connect with and go, wow, that is so me, or I went through that, or that sounds like where I am right now or where I want to be, and all these ways of connecting and hearing that there's, well, the bottom line is that we're looking for hope, and how we find hope is really through self-love. A lot of times that we feel helpless and hopeless and alone and just desperate and full of despair is because our self-love isn't that all that strong, and it doesn't go deep, and it's been questioned, or maybe we haven't even recognized it before. And so as we learn how to self-love and how to show others that maybe they could use a little more, these stories and these chapters are just here really to help us learn how to do it in all the different ways. You know, if you haven't been there and you, or maybe you have been there and you just aren't loving yourself right now, maybe this is the time that one of these stories you'll really connect with. So I'm going to share with you Jenna Carelli's first, but I just want to give a little bit about her because she's in a different book, which is, again, is The Empowered Mom Boss. She's actually going to be holding a live event in February in Tampa, Florida, and it is called Breakthroughs and Boundaries in Business. And if you want to check that out, it's at jennacarelli.com. You can also check it on Facebook. We love directing everybody to those chapter to those how to connect, so you can just see what they're all about. And wow, every time you do, I want to stress this, every time you go to any one of these co-authors' Facebook pages, they are filled with inspiration, motivation. I mean, every picture is of a person truly, first of all, not just being happy, because you know what, it's great, you know what, we're happy, but they also, which I love us about everybody, they are sharing even the struggles that they may come up to now, or the setbacks or the surprises. And so it's not just all, oh great, another person having this perfect life. It is filled with, wow, look at them living their life on purpose and by choice and because they have self-love. So let's continue here with Story Time for the Self-Lover, and we are going to read first from Jenna Carelli. Mindset Over the Middle Row by Jenna Carelli. Without a doubt in our minds, we invited her on our weekend family vacation. In a matter of days, we decided she'd never receive an invite on a family vacation again, ever. I had a thought at the forefront of my mind that day. There was something telling me to just let it out, tell the world. I decided to go for it. I told everyone from the back seat of our 14-passenger van that I wanted to be an entrepreneur. I was going to quit my job as a corporate paralegal and pursue a job as a personal trainer and nutrition coach. Almost immediately, I caught the attention of a fellow entrepreneur in the car who was very intrigued, asking all the nitty-gritty details of a startup entrepreneur. Then, boom, the moment happened. A voice came from the middle aisle. She told me I'd never be successful if I quit my corporate job. I've always had a dream of starting a bed and breakfast, but I'll never pursue that dream because dreams don't come true, she said. This person later went on to tell me that the man of my dreams would never marry me if I became self-employed. She said that I wouldn't be able to provide for a family if I was in business for myself. So there I sat, a visionary with a solid dream, a dream that was completely shattered with words, and even worse, through expression, in a matter of seconds. I had finally built up the courage to share this vision with those who I felt were closest to me, and I was shut down. I cried. I bawled my eyes out right there in the back seat of that passenger van. I could have taken this toxic encounter and brushed it off as one person's viewpoint. Certainly one person does not have the power to dictate my future. Except I've always been a people pleaser. I've always wanted everyone to like me. I'm the person who says sorry without reason when someone else isn't paying attention and accidentally bumps into me on the street. I let this toxic encounter rule the next year of my life. The power of one interaction can set the tone for the days, months, or years thereafter if you let it. Remember the old adage, sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. For the first 27 years of my life, that phrase never spoke true to me. Negative words didn't just harm me, they injured me emotionally. I would later come to recognize the cycle of conflict, acknowledge that it starts from within, and learn how to manage it before it amounted to anything serious. However, at the moment, and in the next several months following this encounter, I handled things a bit differently. When she shot me my dream down, I was initially surprised. I didn't quite understand why anyone would be so dismissive of someone else's dream. Then I was angry, so angry with this one particular individual. Then in a matter of seconds, I was terrified. I internalized every piece of that day, every word that was said. I started believing that I was foolish, selfish, and dumb for having dreams. It took me a year to figure out how to manage this toxic relationship, and then I had to take action on piecing my life back together. It's one thing to come to a realization and acknowledge it, but it's a totally separate ballgame, and one that many don't play, to actually take action and execute. Here's how my toxic encounter with one person spiraled into a series of complications in other areas of my life. It added trouble, difficulty, hardship, and distress to many of my relationships moving forward. I once looked up to this particular adult who then told me I would be worthless if I pursued my dream. I was left with emotional scars, and it seemed like they multiplied by the day. Then I started to question the relationships I had with friends and even my boyfriend at the time. I started experiencing social anxiety, always feeling as though I was in survival mode and needed to prove everyone wrong. I had to work on troubleshooting relationships. I had to learn how to truly manage and cope with the judgment of hypercritical society. I recognized that I was focusing on survival and getting through my own struggles and completely forgetting about feeding other relationships that were important to me. I started hating myself even more and began to align my self-worth with other judgmental friends and their comments. I became unaligned with the person who I truly was and the person who I wanted to be. I became submissive to my own arbitrary thoughts. Despite feeling as though all odds were against me, I persevered hard towards my entrepreneurial dream. I took baby steps and followed through on every gut feeling, every notion of my intuition. I would work on my business in the early morning and late afternoon hours, and in between those hours, I would go through the motions of my day job as a corporate paralegal. During this time, I learned to accept the fact that this person was not going to give me her blessing. I learned how to stand for what I believed and to stop seeking approval from everyone else. I learned how to stop being so apprehensive that I was making the wrong decisions and would have to apologize for my actions. I was annoyed when I learned that this person wasn't the only one with this viewpoint, that it was actually a quite popular societal belief that entrepreneurs is a recipe for disaster. I learned to trust that I had the ability to carve my own path and was capable of believing in myself, trusting my intuition and gut. Initially, my goal was to prove one person wrong. However, this was a pretty and extremely selfish goal. I dug a really deep hole and took highly toxic relationships that already stuck like glue and added super glue to the mix. It turns out that it's not healthy trying to prove one person wrong for any length of time. After all, I had dreams of changing the world. Who cares about one person? A few short months later, I married the man of my dreams. Then boom, the mindset shift happened. The mindset shift was the extra fuel I needed to kick things into high gear with my business and make things happen. The mindset shift was a direct result of an outside motivational factor, one that ironically happened to be inside of me at the time. I found out that I was pregnant and discovered a piece of self-love by the way of growing a tiny human. Mama mode kicked in pretty quickly. Everything shifted, my mindset, my outlook, and my career path. I gave myself a corporate exit strategy. 9 months to at minimum match my monthly corporate salary so I could quit my unfulfilling job and stay at home with my beautiful daughter. It's funny how such a strong force of motivation, like finding out you're pregnant, makes you realize just how overworked, underpaid, and unrewarding your current job really is. It was go time. Instead of just believing in myself and knowing that I can do it, I now had to take those thoughts and beliefs and put them into action. The risk of staying in my corporate job and not getting to watch my little girl grow up was great enough now. I built a six-figure business after the mindset shift, all while raising a newborn, working less, and going against every single thing that society had told me to do. I'm here to tell you that you can do it too. No matter what your story is or what part of your journey you're currently in, here's why. You are powerful. So powerful that you have the ability to wipe out all the other conflict in your life. All you need to do is to seek to love yourself more and avoid aligning your self-worth with others' approval. I have admiration for myself, along with joy and love for those closest to me more than ever before. It will always be a work in progress kind of love and admiration, but when you can see yourself for who you truly are and not what others may think or not think of you, nothing else matters. This didn't start to happen for me until my mindset shift. What matters most is asking yourself, am I going to take action on this dream, this passion, or am I going to sit around and let it drag me down day in and day out? I hope your answer is action. Action is fulfilling. I am now in the business of teaching others to follow their dreams, make their passion a reality, and do it in a way that frees up their time so they have enough energy to give their loved ones. My mission is to serve entrepreneurs in a way that is authentic to themselves and their brand. I want you to go for it and beat the odds. Seek to love yourself more and forget about the approval of others. This will lead to never-ending optimism, buoyancy, positivity, and aggressiveness that will shine through to every person you encounter. It's time to make the switch from dream mode to action mode. I choose to make the switch when I found out I was pregnant with my daughter. This might mean taking a huge risk on yourself and your family for a greater return, or it could mean taking baby steps and tackling one item at a time. For me, this meant signing off on a steady paycheck with good health benefits and setting aside my personal hobbies and selfishness for a little while to create something bigger and better. For my family. I took a series of small steps to address my challenges and adversities. It didn't happen overnight, and it wasn't a spontaneous decision. It was hard work. I needed to swallow my pride for a bit and reorganize my own internal struggles with a fear of not being good enough, smart enough, savvy enough, or educated enough to stand on my own, in my own power, and say yes to something that had been nudging me for a long time. So many of us are afraid to take the next step, fearful of doing something outside of the norm of what society teaches us to do, too afraid of what someone else might think of our decisions rather than narrowing in on your own personal happiness and future expectations. I am the daughter of an entrepreneur. I watched my father run his own business, dictate his own hours, and call the shots of his own life. I was introduced to self-employment at a young age, yet I went to school with doctor's children. When I was in grade school, I felt the societal pull to grow up and have a job with all the kids of all the kinds of letters behind my name. After the mindset shift, I set a new mission for myself and my business: to impact a larger part of this world in a way that truly feels good. Get rid of friendships that instigated negative behavior, stand in my own power, and speak my mind freely. Find your mindset shift and become the powerful person you are meant to be.
The best of the holistic, spiritual, and conscious world. Om Times Radio. IOM FM.
Humanity Healing International is a small nonprofit with a big dream. Since 2007, HHI has been working tirelessly to bring help to communities with little or no hope. Our projects are not broad mandates, nor are they overnight solutions, but they bring the reassurance that no one is alone and that someone cares. To learn more, please visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is.
My name is Victor Furman. Some call me The Voice. I've always been fascinated with human nature, spirituality, science, and the crossroads at which they meet. Join me Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern on Om Times Radio, and we'll explore these topics and so much more on Destination Unlimited.
Enjoy passive income benefits while creating a cottage experience for others. From a relaxing getaway to connecting with nature, sitting around flickering campfire light, dipping in cool, refreshing waters, strengthening your body with biking, hiking, boating, and swimming. And you have the cottage that could be a part of all of those memories while earning you money. Financial abundance as a thank you for renting your cottage. Become a cottage rental owner today, safely and supported. RentCottage.com.
In the wake of a disaster, what one thing can you send that will help people the most? A blanket, a tent, a sandbag, a doctor. Actually, if you send a monetary donation, you send all these things. Even a small donation can make a big impact and can quickly become exactly what people affected by disaster need most.
In the wake of a hurricane, your monetary donation can make a huge difference to those in need. To donate, visit supporthurricanerelief.org. That's supporthurricanerelief.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
And thank you so much for joining us here again at Light on Living as we continue with reading stories for the self-lover. And we are reading from the book, What Self-Love Got to Do With It. We're jumping into a really, really awesome chapter. I love this chapter so much. It is by Stephanie Davis Miller, and it is called Growth Through Adversity. Growth Through Adversity by Stephanie Davis Miller. Perspective. Everyone has their own. Their views are as their fingerprints. We all experience events in our own way. We perceive these events based on our lived experiences, culture, influences, and age. Things as minimal as our day-to-day routines, like purchasing your morning coffee, going for a run, or driving to work. Each time you do so is a new experience. Memories of the experience are recalled later and formed by your perception of what occurred. Recognizing this, one must be cautious to not judge another's interpretation of the event. Just because you don't feel the experience was impactful, to another, it could be pivotal. As a paramedic, part of my assessment is to routinely ask my patients to rate their pain using a pain scale. Sir, on a scale of 1 to 10, can you rate the intensity of your pain today? It can be very difficult for some to come up with a number. If so, I will press further and ask, can you tell me what was the worst pain in that you've ever experienced? Like a broken bone, childbirth? This usually helps them by using qualifiers to base their answers. Many patients tell me they are in 10 out of 10 pain while speaking in full sentences and present otherwise non-distressed. This 10 out of 10 pain description can be describing anything ranging from a stubbed toe to someone who is severely ill or grievously injured. The same can be said for those patients who state that they are not experiencing any pain or rate low on the scale. The injury or ailments can range from grievous bodily harm to a recent onset of the flu. The number is based on their perception of the pain. Perception is based on personality, lived experiences, culture, and social norms. Each impact the individual's reaction to experiences in a unique manner. People have often said that they don't know how I do it. My reply is always the same. I didn't have a choice. I just did it. My answer comes from my perception at the time. We always have a choice. Thankfully, even in my darkest hour, my inner warrior was telling me to keep fighting. I can recall several times being told, "Wow, you should write a book." To that, I say, "Let's get started." My inner warrior has always been present, although there was a period of time where she was barely audible, buried under a cascade of challenges that at the time were larger than life. Thankfully, she persevered, and through those struggles, I was molded into the woman I am today. For 10 years, I have been extremely reluctant to share with anyone in the first responder circle the fact that I started my career as a paramedic with a previous mental health injury, PTSD. I entered this field with the perception that I was damaged goods, that any type of trauma response I would have would be directly linked to my previous experiences and diagnoses, in a sense making me a weak link in the first responder circle. First responders are tough, ironclad, and can handle anything. They are not affected by the repeated exposure to trauma. Or are they? I felt because I was entering with PTSD, I had no place speaking out about the subject. And so, although I have advocated for first responder mental health for the past 10 years, volunteering, I've only recently disclosed my personal relationship. This thinking trap is false. This is a glimpse into what the injury can do to a person. PTSD shatters any form of self-confidence or self-assurance that you may have had. It crumbles you, consistently eating away at your very being. You trust no one, question everything, and start to feel that there is no good in the world. You live in a constant sense of fear. Question every ounce that kindness brings your way and destroys it. My college experience and subsequent hiring as a medic were extremely trying times for me, both emotionally and physically. My marriage was unhealthy and, at times, abusive. I was functioning for the most part as a single parent to my beautiful children, both under 10 years of age at the time. I continue to carry my emotional baggage with me from years past, battling an injury that went unidentified for 7 years. I was diagnosed with PTSD in the year 2000, and by that time I had been exposed to several traumas. Any one of these exposures would have been severe enough to trigger an acute stress reaction. When left unattended, an acute stress reaction can merge into the diagnosis of PTSD. Or as I prefer to call my personal diagnosis, a post-traumatic stress injury. In March 1993, my family and I were planning a trip to our condo in Florida. I didn't want to go, but I had no choice. I would have preferred staying at home with my friends. They were the most important thing to me at the time in my life. The day before we left for Florida, my best friend Vicky had a few friends over to celebrate her birthday a little early and invited me to join. Instead, I made the boy I was dating my priority and only stopped in to see Vicky for about 10 minutes before I headed home. I had planned to get her a gift while in Florida. We arrived in Florida, and it was a little cooler than usual. We had to go and buy a couple of sweaters and pants to keep us warm as we hadn't packed appropriately. There had been some severe weather warnings, but nothing out of the ordinary for Florida. On the night of March 12th, 1993, my family and I finished watching Law & Order around 11 p.m. and headed off to bed. It was raining hard. At approximately 3 a.m., I was woken by the most horrifying noise. It was as if a herd of elephants were running across our roof. Terrified, I leaped out of bed to grab my younger sister, who was in the other twin bed in the room, to get her to safety. It took me several attempts to move her because she was frozen with fear and dead weight. I eventually got her up, and we ran into my parents' room and huddled together. The noise was the sound of our roof being ripped off the condo in what later I learned was called the storm of the century. Later that day, I was finally able to get to a phone. I immediately called my friends to let them know I had survived. I didn't want them to be worried. I called Vicky's house. No answer. I called another friend's home, and her little sister answered. The girl was in tears. She told me your sister wasn't home, that something bad happened and I needed to call back to talk to her. I begged her for the information, but she insisted I call back later. I hung up the phone thinking, what could possibly have happened that was worse than what I had just experienced? When I called back a few hours later, my friend was still not home. I demanded that I be told what had happened, and just like that, it came. Vicky's dead. To say I was completely devastated would be an understatement. Growing up, I moved schools approximately every 2 years. In grade 8, my family moved from a small town where I attended private school to a new city and public school. I was alone, scared, and in need of a friend to show me the way. Vicky and I had connected shortly after I'd started school and quickly became best friends. She was exactly what I needed. Funny, outgoing, charismatic, fair, and someone I could trust and depend on. Going on 5 years of friendship and living in the same place with the same friends, this was the longest I'd been able to keep a constant friendship. Vicky meant the world to me. I flew home alone. My mom offered to accompany me, but there was so much to deal with in Florida, and we had just arrived. I told her I would be okay. I was going to be with my friends. From that day on, my warrior, my protector, kicked into high gear. My strength was needed to protect everyone. Everyone but me. 2 months later, the same friend mentioned earlier, the one I called and whose family delivered the fateful news about Vicky, well, her and I were the victims of a brutal sexual assault. I was the first patient to receive treatment at the new sexual assault treatment center in my city. Not only did I have to come to terms with what happened, I felt like everyone knew. I had not yet processed the previous events, and now I was faced with another trauma. I felt like I failed and did not keep my friends safe. After the assault, the men who hurt us stated that we would have to stay put for a while. They were too intoxicated to drive us home. Thankfully, my parents insisted I learn to drive a standard shift vehicle. So in that moment of desperation, my warrior took over and she drove their vehicle. My warrior drove my friend to a safe location on the other side of the region. Doing so took me further away from my home, my safety, but I didn't care. My priority was to get her to a safe place. When she was dropped off, I was alone in the vehicle with the men who hurt us. On the drive home, they remained in the back seat mocking me, making horrible comments. Regardless, I got myself home. The last thing they said was, "That was fun. We'll have to do it again sometime." I slammed the car door and sprinted to my house. Because of the assault, I was hospitalized and later referred to the sexual assault clinic for therapy. At 17, I found that the therapy sessions did nothing for me. I agreed to go because I thought I had to. My expectation was they were going to fix me and take away all the pain that I was feeling. That did not happen. What did help was the information. In school, I was taking a law class. We had a year-end research presentation due. I chose to do my assignment on sexual assault. I was curious to learn about the laws, the issue of consent, and how and why charges were laid. I asked the clinic for some assistance and was given several videotapes to watch. On the tapes, there were many different women who had experienced a similar incident. What struck me the most was the Me Too element. There on the screen in front of me were women saying the same words, sentences, and thoughts as I was experiencing. That presentation was a blessing in disguise as it forced me into action. It stirred something in me, the desire to learn and advocate for others, to grow through the adversity of the trauma. During my presentation, you could have heard a pin drop. I had the full attention of my classmates and my presentation went over the required time. I received applause from my classmates and an A+ from my teacher. This was my first experience with growth through adversity. This is also about as far as I got with my healing process. Somehow, I made it through the following 7 years, even though they were filled with many challenges. Over the years I suffered, I didn't know I was sick. The numbness, hopelessness, emptiness, uncontrollable anger, risky behavior, suicidal ideations, and depression became my new normal. I've had some very dark times. I have held a knife in my hands, placed the blade on my wrist, and even taken pills. I understand this was due to my inability to cope. Action instigated by desperation, a cry for help. My injury crept in and took over my world. I had no idea that I was ill. By the time I was diagnosed, I felt like it was too late. I didn't understand how bad I was or what the diagnosis of PTSD meant. I was thankful that someone recognized I had a problem and was willing to help me. At the 7-year point, I had faced another couple of incidents, one of which caused me to crumble. The only thing that kept me from committing suicide was the fact that I was pregnant with my first child. The warrior was still within me, the warrior who protects. There was no way I was going to do anything to cause my baby harm. I was told I had PTSD, diagnosed by psychiatrists, and was placed on a regimen of pharmacotherapy and intensive psychotherapy that involved weekly evaluations with the doctor. As the months passed, I managed to continue to function. I felt I had no choice. I had a 1-year-old daughter and a new baby on the way. My marriage was unhealthy and unsupportive, and it continued to impact the efficacy of my treatment plan. As a result of the incident that happened at my workplace and the catalyst to my breakdown and subsequent diagnosis, I lost my employment. I was paid off with hush money to drop the lawsuit, and I was not capable of returning to work. After a couple of years, my treatment was quote-unquote complete, and I had successfully weaned myself off the prescription medications. I don't remember my final visits or the instructions given to me for moving forward. Looking back, I wish I had been told that living with PTSD is a lifelong battle that requires constant work to stay healthy. With my limited knowledge, I assumed I was cured, even though I continued to experience debilitating triggers, panic attacks, challenges with anger outbursts, and suicidal ideations. That was my normal. The safety in my home became increasingly more compromised, and I realized I had to do something. I began my exit plan with a career in paramedicine, which could support my kids and I financially and help others. I began taking online courses to upgrade my studies. I joined the gym at the local college and began a rigorous workout plan. I knew this career demanded strength of character and body. I lost a couple of friendships because I was so dedicated. I couldn't attend coffee dates. I stopped drinking alcohol. I cleaned up my diet, and I worked my butt off. I researched the program and went to meet the program coordinator before applying for the program to introduce myself and ask for any advice for admission. There was no room for failure. I was determined to be accepted to the college in my region. It was my only option, as I was also responsible for the kids. I secured a part-time job at the vet clinic to save some money and pay for my tuition. I applied in 2007, not expecting to be successful because I never felt good enough, a symptom of PTSD. I was one of 32 accepted out of over 1,000 applicants into the paramedicine program. I'm amazed I survived the 2-year program. My first husband told me I wouldn't amount to anything. He threatened me and tried to sabotage everything I was doing. I believed he was suffering from mental health issues related to his work in policing and earlier trauma. The issue got so bad at home that one of my instructors pulled me aside to ask if everything was okay. I told her I was fine. I suppose I wasn't masking it as well as I thought I did. Throughout the paramedic program, I was on a roller coaster of experiences. I was having panic attacks and had had a car accident on the 401 with my son, which resulted in a back, neck, arm injury. I won a scholarship, and I made a lifelong friend. But the stress of completing scenarios would often drive me to becoming physically ill before it was my turn. Through it all, I persevered, never gave up, and ended up graduating with honors. I was the recipient of the Mature Student Award. In 2017, I was recognized by Conestoga College with an Alumni of Distinction Award. In a way, I'm glad I was told I was worthless. There's no stronger incentive to me than to tell me I can't do something. To those comments I received years ago, I say, watch me go. I have lived in the world of a first responder my entire life. My father is a 32-year veteran of the Toronto Police Service, and my ex-husband continues to serve as a police officer. I recognize in them, as well as myself, some of the classic first responder personality traits that can be quite harmful. Being a control freak, being a king or queen of catastrophe, having a sick, twisted sense of humor, refusing to trust people, being bad at relationships, being a workaholic. I've heard stories told about police officers who just couldn't cope with the job. As the wife of a police officer, I have experienced the emotions, struggles, personality changes, and tolls this profession can cause. I remember desperately searching for some type of support group for other women like me, with no success. I felt like no one understood what I was going through. I decided along the way that something more needed to be done. There is very little support, recognition, or acceptance surrounding mental health in the first responder community. There are no current statistics, but many of us come to the job having previously experienced an adverse traumatic event. A very common response to this type of exposure is to want to make a change, to advocate, to do better, to protect others from the experience of pain, and to help. You don't ever really get over PTSD, but you can learn how to cope and move forward living a healthy, productive life. The danger for me and other first responders is the potential triggers I'm exposed to while at work helping others. Currently, this is a very taboo topic, and although steps have been made to educate the first responder community about mental health and how our exposures can impact us, the fear of appearing weak or unstable is still alive and well. The stigma is very much here. More needs to be done. The number of first responder suicides is constantly climbing. This can be preventable. It wasn't until I learned of a former colleague's suicide that I decided to act and help the first responders I work alongside every day. I decided to share my own journey to help others. My philosophy is, if I can help just one person to understand that these feelings, behaviors, and personality changes are normal reactions to the exposure of traumatic events, then it is worth it. I want them to know that it is a human response and that it's okay to be human, that there is help out there. The scariest yet most empowering thing is when you discover that only you have the power to heal yourself and recover. In 2017, I began the first responder peer support chapter in my community called Wings of Change, created by Natalie Harris. In October, I had the opportunity to share my story in two provinces, reaching over 600 people. Since then, I have been invited to several engagements to speak about my journey. In 2018, I was over the moon to speak at the Team McConter Memorial Trust Education Symposium in Toronto. The Team of Trust is where I got my start with the first responder mental health advocacy when I was awarded the Ontario Scholarship for my essay in 2007. While in college, I submitted an essay on PTSD to a national competition. After becoming a successful candidate and learning about the Team of Trust, I made the decision to pay it forward, joined up to volunteer with them, and so began my journey in first responder mental health advocacy. Accepting my PTSD as part of who I am is an ongoing battle. To say I no longer struggle would be false. I slip occasionally. When I'm in the shit, I tend to isolate myself from friends and family. Thankfully, through years of therapy, education, research, and communication, my loving second husband lets me know when I'm slipping and is not afraid to gently suggest I seek help. I, too, am much more in tune with myself and can see things earlier than before and reach out. I've come to discover that it is not a bad thing to practice self-care and take a break when needed. It is not a weakness to ask for help. And best of all, I now understand that I am not worthless damaged goods. In fact, through my lived experience, I have a personal wealth of knowledge that I can use to help others through sharing. I can be empathetic to those in need. I can relate to many different experiences. I also understand that when someone is hurting, it is not time to get on my own soapbox and say, "I know how you feel." No one can possibly understand exactly how someone feels because that person comes to the incident with their own history. Through my experiences, I understand on a very profound level that when people are hurting, what they need is to be seen, heard, and understood. I've also learned through my journey that education is a key to understanding and navigating through difficult times and exposure to trauma. There are many different normal reactions to such events. My goal is to create a healthier first responder culture. I pay close attention to my moods and my reactions to them. I have an excellent therapist who continuously helps me navigate through my challenges. I understand that to stay healthy, I need to work on myself and be an active participant in my recovery. I know I'm worth the time and effort. I am thankful for my experiences and the storms I have faced because they have made me a better person. Through my grief, sadness, and hurt, something beautiful and selfless has evolved. It is amazing what you can learn when you allow yourself to be a little vulnerable, something that can be scary. My journey has been both terrifying and exhilarating. It is possible to continue to live a happy, healthy life after being diagnosed with PTSD. For me, it means I can continue to work as a paramedic, but it takes constant work, constant effort, and constant support. It is important to understand that while I can work in the first responder field and function effectively, I am an individual. It is not appropriate to compare my journey to anyone else's. We are all individuals. It has taken over 25 years of trial and error to discover what works for me and what does not. I believe my ongoing advocacy is part of my continued growth through adversity. I don't have all the answers. No one does. I'm going to keep on trying and keep fighting with the hopes that maybe I can help just one person. That perhaps through education and awareness, I can prevent just one from suffering this affliction. At the very least, in normalizing these feelings, I hope to help promote understanding, support, and awareness. I am excited about sharing my journey moving forward through speaking engagements and completion of my book detailing my challenges and triumphs. It is okay to be human. It's okay to love yourself, no matter what.
The best of holistic, spiritual, and conscious world. Om Times Radio. IOM FM.
Oh my goodness. It really is okay. It's okay to be human. It is okay to love yourself. And I love the no matter what. Everybody remember that. It's a no matter what. It doesn't matter no matter what, okay? I want to move forward. Oh, isn't that funny? Forward. I actually am going to be reading the foreword by Dr. Aaron Oxel. And this is just, oh my goodness, it is full of, I know that most people are going to be listening going, that's me. So let's move into this. So it's Dr. Aaron Oxel. She has written the foreword to What Self-Love Got to Do with It. And please enjoy. So excited to be reading you the next story. And from our book, What Self-Love Got to Do with It, I'm actually going to be sharing a story from Dr. Aaron Oxel. And she actually wrote the foreword. And I just love her and I love her story. And she's just an incredible, incredible woman. And here, please enjoy her story as well. Hi, my name is Aaron, and I'm a recovering perfectionist. This is where you say, hi, Aaron. For many, many years, I masked my fear of not being good enough with performing, proving, and perfecting. I got the grades and degrees. I got the body. I won the awards. I excelled. I achieved. I tried to prove my worth, and it nearly destroyed me. I was riddled with anxiety, a sense of never fitting in, and an extreme discomfort of being in my own skin. I look back on those painful years and I realize I had what I called a God-sized hole in my soul that I attempted to fill with worldly accomplishments, victories, and other self-destructive behaviors, anything to make the pain go away. My lack of self-love eventually led to depression and a dark night of the soul. I was emotionally bankrupt. My cup was empty. It was during my emotional rock bottom that I found the gym. Yep, the gym. I decided to start taking care of myself. What started out as a physical transformation moved into a spiritual and emotional transformation. I started taking risks, being myself, sharing my true thoughts, and making mistakes, and I loved it. I had joined the human race. I finally felt like I belonged. Through my weaknesses, I found strength. Through my vulnerability, I found power. Through my imperfection, I found beauty and strength. The relationships that I had always wanted appeared in my life because I was learning to connect on an authentic and deep level. I fell in love with stepping outside of my comfort zone, and in doing so, my perfectionism lost its oxygen supply. I learned that the best way to serve others is to first serve yourself, not in a selfish way, but in a self-full way. One of my favorite thought leaders, Ayanla Benzant, once said to Oprah, "How you treat yourself is how you treat God, because you are the representative of God in your life. In your life, you've got to be as good to you as you want to be to God in order to be of service to others in the world." Self-love truly is a win-win. It's not selfish to put yourself first. To be the best version of yourself is the most loving thing you can do for yourself and for others. What comes out of the cup is for others, but what is in the cup is yours, and it's your job to keep your cup full. I fully and completely love, accept, and approve of myself. If you were able to rate how true the statement is for you, with 10 being, "Oh yes, that is exactly how I feel," and 1 being, "Pah, no way, I don't believe that at all," what number would you assign yourself? And I'm just going to say that again because I want to repeat the statement that you guys can judge, okay? I fully and completely love, accept, and approve of myself. Psychological research shows that a person's level of self-worth is highly correlated with their level of success, happiness, and joy. The higher their self-worth, the higher their success, happiness, and joy. As a psychologist treating clients for the past 16 years, the common factor that all of my clients share is emotional pain. Psychologists and the majority of all great philosophers in the world would agree that the etiology, the cause of human suffering and the pain, stems from a lack of knowing and often a forgetting of one's worth. So why does self-worth elude so many of us? Why do so many of us struggle with knowing our inherent worth and value? I have good news and bad news. The good news is that bliss is our birthright. The bad news is that we often forget. Thankfully, the stories in this book will help you remember. They will help you unlearn any bad learnings, lies, false teachings, or incorrect messages you have received that have contributed to your lack of confidence or self-love. As a psychologist and success coach, let me share with you my top strategies for increasing your self-love and, in turn, your success. Number 1. Behave your way into different thinking instead of trying to think your way into different behaving. I love that. Example, if you lack the confidence to be a public speaker, instead of trying to convince you are a great speaker, you could hire a speaking coach, prepare, and then deliver your speech. In doing so, you'll most likely receive positive feedback from others, realize that you did better than you expected, and maybe even have some fun in the process. Your confidence will increase after you act, even while being afraid. Number 2, behave in ways that are consistent with your stated values. Example, if being healthy and fit are goals and values of yours, but you treat yourself poorly by eating junk food and never exercising, it's going to be a tall order to feel great about yourself. What if you treated your body as if you cared for it and fed it nutritious food and moved it regularly? You would be behaving in line with your stated values. When you do that, you have a much higher chance of liking yourself. It really is as simple and profound as that. Keep those goals and values at the front and center of your mind. Remind yourself of them daily as they will continue to motivate you to act as if you loved yourself. Number 3, start using positive affirmations that work. Example, instead of staring at yourself in the mirror and saying a big fat lie such as "I love everything about myself," try this 3-step practice to change your stinking thinking to a more positive, healthy thinking. Letter A, validate. Ask yourself, why does it make perfect sense that I am feeling this way? This will help you validate where you learned to doubt yourself and maybe where some past learning experiences have taught you to think negatively. Maybe, for example, when you were a child, someone told you that you weren't smart or would never amount to anything. Acknowledge that you learned to think this way about yourself and say, "It makes perfect sense I don't think I'm smart enough because I was told that as a young, impressionable child." B, pivot. This is the step where you choose to think differently. And it is as simple as saying to yourself, I am capable of thinking differently and more positively about myself. Or, I am learning to more fully and completely love and approve of myself. And see, there's the key, guys. Sorry, I am learning. Didn't say you are. You just said I'm learning. C, replace. The last step is replacing your old negative beliefs with a new positive belief. Now, this is where things get tricky. Don't tell yourself a lie here. Don't say, I am the smartest person on the planet. Instead, remind yourself you are open to change, growth, and learning to view yourself differently. Maybe you start with a statement such as, I am learning to notice my strengths, and I continue to improve myself. Or, I am growing every day, and I am open to loving myself more every day. The stories in this book are just like yours. It is our humanity that is our common bond. Be inspired as you learn how these authors rose out of the ashes of self-doubt, low self-esteem, and fear, and stepped into their greatness and personal power. Remember, when one person shines his or her light, it gives others permission to shine theirs. So shine on! With love, Dr. Aaron Oxel. And what a beautiful way to end this story time for the self-lovers today. So shine on. And so really, please shine on. You can listen to these replays as often as you like. I'm putting the link up. And please join us next Wednesday for another beautiful, beautiful reading from the chapters of What Self-Love Got to Do With It. We continue story time for the self-lover. Thank you guys so much. We'll see you next week.